Welcome to TA1, everything you wanted to know about adventure racing and then some. I'm your host, legendary Randy Erickson, and we'll start with the bad news. A lot of you know Alex Flynn, one of those, for me, one of my good friends that I never met. I think a lot of us have people like that. I got to know Alex. I was invited to come film his first major event when he ran bike and paddled across the United States. Fortunately, it was a bad time for me and I couldn't get away for 3 weeks, but we did try to send Paulette to Lake Erie to paddle with him. One of those, hey, can you be halfway across the country in 3 days and help out with this? And unfortunately, that didn't work out very well either, but it was always, as I posted, exciting and a little bit frightening when I saw Alex's name come up on my phone. Let's 3 month bike ride through Southeast Asia. Sure, why not? And things like that. Alex did get to do Primal Quest, which I know was really high on his list of things to do. He did the BC one and had a great time. He caused me a fairly sleepless night when I was getting ready. He was trying to put together a team for Eco Challenge and realized that one of his teammates didn't have the right passport. So, my friend Scotty Trevino was here, and we spent a late night trying. She was interested, and we needed to find another American. And, shoot, I can't even think who we talked to, who was somewhere in Colorado getting ready for a 100-mile mountain bike race, but actually happened to have their passport with them. Anyway, didn't quite work out either, but So Alex was, if you don't know, had Parkinson's for the last 10 or 12 years and was hell-bent on proving that that didn't need to slow you down, and he did a pretty good job of it. So he was in Nepal training, going to try and climb Everest next spring. So not sure what happened, haven't heard anything, but I'm bummed that I'm not going to get that little jolt when I see his name come up on my phone. So thanks for some interesting times, Alex. Let's see, other than that, not much news in the adventure race world. We got this one with Bend and the Adventure Race World Championships. We got a few episodes like that coming up. And we got some episodes that might be good for your Christmas shopping list. And what else? That's about it. I'm not going to be able to go to Castlewood 8-Hour in St. Louis. It just turns out to be too much going on here. So that kind of sucks, but I'll be in Florida at the week before Christmas for a sports car race. All my Florida friends want to come down to Sebring and hang out a little bit and show you around. So that's it. I've mumbled enough. Let's get this show on the road with Ben Racing. And so fast is slow. No, slow is fast. Never follow Team Ben Racing into the water because you might not ever come out. And thanks for listening and enjoy.
Yeah, I figured it's probably one of those races that I'm just going to say, tell me about the race, and then like, I could probably go back to work and just let you guys talk.
Yeah. Have you been interviewing other folks from Worlds?
No. I mean, I've got people theoretically scheduled, but I had a couple. Basically, the last couple of weeks I've been dealing with this sports car stuff. So it's like, all right, I got that done for now. Now I can start.
Yeah.
You know. Getting everybody. Yeah, I reached out to everybody and everybody's like, yeah, we want to do it. So now it's just getting things scheduled and stuff. And
oh, you know, so
I'd like to get a few Yeah, you'll be the first Worlds team.
Yeah, we might be the first ones to describe the race to you. Well, at least, you know, on live on the podcast.
Yep. So, and I'd like to get, you know, some of the European teams and get their take on it too. But it's just a little harder over there to schedule time wise. I mean, you know, most days I can, you know, I could take an hour in the middle of the day and chat. You know, that's the advantages of working for yourself and by yourself.
Yeah. Did you put that ceiling in that house? It looks pretty nice.
Yeah, it's actually just rough lumber. Mm-hmm. Went to sawmill and bought rough lumber, and then it's not whitewash. It's really light, really watered down white paint, and then just gave it a quick sand. So, yeah, it turned out pretty good. We put the first couple of pieces up, and it's like, I don't know. Barb and I were looking at it, and it's like, but once you got going, so all the trim in here is rough lumber, and she kind of wanted a cabin farmhouse feel.
Yeah, like a modern farmhouse sort of deal.
Yeah. And it's really nice because she's got chickens and kennels dogs and raises songbirds and stuff, so she can literally drive in the garage over there and everything's inside, all the kennels. She can let the chickens out of the coop without going outside. There's Chelsea.
Hi, how's it going?
Hey, good. And there comes Dan.
Well, if we could all be on here, that'd be amazing.
Yeah, and there's Lars. This is kind of
hello
weird. when
hello there he Randy is. Yeah, I have a Pepsi.
I have strawberry Fanta.
Oh my god, yeah.
Okay, who wants? Let's see. Does anybody here need an introduction? Do we all know? Let's see. Darren, people might not know exactly who you are. So who are you?
I'm Darren Steinbaugh. I'm an adventure racer out of the Pacific Northwest of the United States. I adventure race on Tower Racing and now, you know, once on Bend Racing. I was the TAC for Bend Racing in Fiji, and I was the part of the media crew and the last Patagonian expedition race for the team as well.
Yeah. So yeah, you have the bona fides.
Yeah, I have credentials.
So, okay, Lars, since you're drinking, who are you?
So my name is Lars Bugerhøj. I was born in Denmark, but I think 8-9 years ago I moved to Norway. Been a bit in Denmark during the pandemic, and now I'm back in Norway, where everything has opened up. And we are more or less back to normal. I'm doing a lot of adventure racing. I'm very happy to be a part of Bend Racing, powered by Yoga Slaggers. Learned a lot by racing with them. And then on the side of that, I'm organizing races in Scandinavia. And the biggest is Nordic Island, which is just a part of the ARWS World Cup. So we have really exciting plans for this race this year, but that's another story.
Yeah, that's cool. So we got Dan and Chelsea, and if you don't know them, there's like 75 podcasts with those. So so say hi, Chelsea.
Hi, I'm excited to be here. Right.
Cool, so well, give us a quick thumbnail who you are. I always assume maybe somebody new is listening, right?
Yeah. Well, my name is Chelsea Magnus. I have been on Team Bend Racing, powered by Yoga Slackers, for 13 years now. We were formerly Team Yoga Slackers. And then when we all moved to Bend, or a lot of us moved to Bend, we changed to Bend Racing to make it easy. And that's me. I have a blog, Endurance Mama. So I write a lot of things on there. And Jason and I run Team Bend Racing and the company Bend Racing. So we put on races, mostly him, honestly, and I get to rate them. And Dan, of course, helps us a lot with the course design. So I think that's me.
Okay. Well, and last but obviously not least, Dan.
I'm Dan Stoudigo. I've been racing adventure races with Jason 15, maybe more years. So Jason and I have been racing a long time. He runs Bend Racing, the race promotion company now, and I pop on for races, help put on races, vet course, yank checkpoints, rescue teams, whatever. We went to World Champs together, or I guess with Chelsea. Jason went to Canada. I don't know why we keep talking about Jason.
He's just this omnipresence, right? Everywhere you go, there's some Coach, Jason-ness.
Coach Piglet, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
It's actually funny.
We're coming up on, it's Halloween, no, it's, right? We got Jason.
Right.
Go ahead, Lars.
No, it's actually fun. During the race, a couple of times, we thought we had the fifth and the sixth team member who was either Jason or Spirit B, but that's a completely different story. So there was definitely both with us in the Spirit, and I think former team members and friends and family and stuff like that has also kind of been around on the course somehow.
So how did you guys all, how did the four of you become Team Bend for the World Championships? I'm assuming there's got to be some sort of story there.
I guess so I'll tell. Lars, go for it.
Yeah. No, so since Patagonia Expedition Race 2 years ago, I've been a part of Bend Racing, and we did Eco Challenge Fiji on two Team Bend Racing teams, and we were kind of dialing in to do the one in Patagonia, which was postponed or maybe canceled. And then it was me, Jason, Dan, and Chelsea to try and go there. So it was always up and around that we should go together for a big race. And then World Championship in Spain come along, and we thought, okay, let's go there. And then Jason had to replace one of his hips, so he was kind of out. So we got a new team member in the Bend Racing squad, which is called Chris. And I was really keen to race with him. And then I got a message somehow that we were looking for plane tickets for Darren. And I was like, guys, what's going on? We are leaving in like 1.5 days, and now you're looking for plane ticket for another person. And I know Darren really rail and like him a lot from being around the team. So I was a bit confused first if he was going as a media man or he was going as a racer. And then I figured out that Chris had got COVID and didn't pass his traveling test. So they brought Darren in like really last minutes, 24 hours before leaving, more or less. So yeah, that was kind of the story.
That's a story. So Darren, were you going to go over anyway, or were you just going to watch?
I was just going to watch. Actually, Jason had asked me to kind of be prepared to be his replacement in Canada if he had any trouble, you know, passing his COVID test or even just getting across the border, because sometimes they just decide you can't come into Canada. So I was kind of preparing myself mentally and preparing my gear for that. And I was already going to be in the Puget Sound area shooting a swim run. that was on Orcas Island. So I was on my way to that and like on the ferry, and Chelsea got a hold of me and said, hey, Chris is having a hard time and we might need like an emergency replacement for Spain. Could you make that happen? And I said, I need to like get my ducks in an order, but the short answer is yes, I could make that happen. And so by the time I was done on the race I was shooting was on Sunday. Of course, I didn't have cell service, so it was impossible to communicate. But by the time I finished with the race and was on the ferry back to the mainland, Dan had changed all the tickets around, and we had made plans for me to drive clear back to Bend in Central Oregon, pick up the crew and prep gear, and then drive back to Portland to fly out to Spain early Tuesday morning. It was all very, very like 11th hour, last minute, kind of seat of the pants, but we were able to pull it off. There was like issue after issue. I actually was opening a piece of gear with a sharp kitchen knife and stabbed myself in the hand, and Dan had to glue it back together for me. And, I didn't have any food purchased because I wasn't expecting I figured that if I was going to Canada, it'd be easy to get food. But since we were going to Spain, it was all different. We had to prep food and get, Dan got some 4-hour food ready for me. And it was pretty intense just even getting on the plane to get there. It was nice to be able to relax and just fly in a big tube for a while.
So Chelsea, were you put in charge of finding the teammate? And I mean, I'm guessing you probably didn't get real stressed because this isn't the first time the shit's hit the fan for you guys. So what was it like trying to round all that up?
It was actually quite stressful because, we found out that Chris had COVID or got COVID actually shortly after we got back from Nationals, which was supposed to be kind of our practice race with Chris because we hadn't really raced with him. We've known him for years, but so we were kind of like getting the glue together, which felt really good after Nationals. And then we get the call that he's actually tested positive and that he's not feeling good at all. And he just kind of disappears into the woods for a week and a half and doesn't really communicate with us because he's getting over COVID and not feeling well. Yeah. And so it was like, I was like, okay, I'm just going to go ahead with this. And, he's going to go. But then after not hearing from him, I started kind of getting the feeling that he wasn't actually going to be able to go, both because he would probably still test positive and because his body, it wouldn't be good for him. He would go on he said that he kept on trying to go on a run and then he would just sleep for 14 hours after a gentle run, which for him as a really amazing runner, that was a big kind of like telling to us that he wasn't in his right body at his peak. On Sunday, I was like, okay, Chris, we have to know. And he was like, you know what? I can't make myself do this. And I put the call out to a couple local racers. And then Jason was like, well, I'm definitely going to do Canada. So why don't you give the call to Darren as well? I put the feelers out there to 3 or 4 racers, including Darren. And Darren was the first to say yes. And I was like, okay, we're just going to go with this. And then he disappeared for a day. And we just... It was actually quite stressful for both Dan and I. Dan did a lot of the legwork with talking to the airport or the airlines. He was on the phone for like 6 hours during his son's birthday.
I've forgotten the hold music, but it ran through my head for most of the race.
Yeah.
Oh, that's probably was the worst part. So, yeah. I mean, that's a big deal, Dan, doing all that. Was it just, I mean, were they being hard about it or?
It
took a long time.
Like there were firm boundaries because of the like various contracts between whatever. It was mostly just sitting on hold. So they were, in general, pretty helpful to the main stress was just like that we have families and that I wasn't planning on spending 6 hours on the phone. I was planning on spending 6 hours taking care of the kids instead so that my wife could have some free time before I left for a big a big block of time. So it was mostly just like, that was my son's birthday party that day. And it's just like, I don't know, like, this sucks. I'm sorry. I missed the last birthday and I missed the birthday before that. And this birthday, I'm, your birthday party, I'm sitting on hold with, you know, random travel agencies. But you know, fortunately, it all worked out. So like, there was plane tickets that met our budget, and the only option wasn't like, you know, infinity money for a first class ticket.
Yeah, I'm sure, Darren, that's what you were hoping for. Is like, oh, here you go, all we could get you is a first class ticket, right?
No, I'm pretty used to traveling last minute and dealing with all that. I travel for work, a couple times a month sometimes. So I'm used to all the last minute stuff.
Yeah. It is kind of amazing, right? When you think about it, to get on a, like you said, a metal tube and fly halfway around the world. So once you guys got on the plane, was it pretty, you can't really relax because you go into a race, but was it almost like a vacation for 14 hours?
Smooth sailing, especially for Chelsea and I, where we're just like watching videos instead of taking care of kids or managing email or whatever. So it's just, it is pretty profoundly relaxing to not have any responsibilities.
So yeah, we kind of used the time when we weren't on the plane, when we were in layovers, like in Ireland, to kind of chat about race strategy and team dynamics and communication. Because since I was so last minute, like I wasn't privy to the plan. It was so we had to kind of figure out what that was and go over it with me. And of course, Lars wasn't there with us, but we were able to catch him up when we got into Spain. So we used the time well, relaxing on the plane and then chatting and relaxing at the airports was pretty nice.
Yeah. Does it sort of like take a little pressure off you you haven't been thinking about it for 6 months that you're going to race, you know?
No, because
put more pressure?
It's more pressure. Is my gear ready? Is my bike ready? Is my fitness there? Because my big races that I had planned for were all in the beginning of summer, and I was planning on, I had been working three jobs and just kind of, you know, trying to maintain my base level of fitness. So it doesn't take any stress off. It adds the stress of, is everything ready? And we threw everything together so last minute. Did I get everything? Like, I was pretty sure. We went over the mandatory gear list several times, and and I always had everything in my van anyway, but it would have been really easy to forget something major, batteries or lights or, you know, what have you. So, but it was nice that, like, it wasn't like I was just jumping on with, you know, three random people. You know, I've trained with Dan and Chelsea, both, endurance, adventure racing stuff, and raced against them. And we also, we've all trained acrobatics together, pretty high level acrobatics. So there's like already an open dialogue there. And I've hung out with Lars in Patagonia. And also when he's come out for Expedition Oregon, we've got to hang out a little bit. And so it wasn't like, it would have been much more stressful jumping in with a team of random people who I got set up with last minute. It was nice that it was, friends and racing and acro family.
I think it's a contribute to what adventure racing is actually about. It's a lot about communication and it's a lot about trusting each other. So on that page, we were pretty dialed in as a team.
Yeah, you knew everybody's strengths and weaknesses, right? More or less.
Yeah, there's always little surprises, but we kind of went in with eyes open.
Yeah, and Darren was super open to everything that we were talking about. He was just kind of like an open sponge, just took it all in. And we couldn't have asked, honestly, for a better 11th hour teammate to step in. He was just like, okay, tell me everything and I will do my best. So that was
it's almost like as time went on, it became more and more clear how gigantic the ask of Darren was, because like I wasn't on the call, but it sounded like just like call hey, you want to do this? Yes. And then we're out there and we're just like, wow, he agreed to a lot in that, like, however long that consideration took, as we're just like out there. It's like, wow, this is, there's a lot here. Like, we were asking a tremendous amount of him and he just stepped up every time, which was just like really amazing. I'm really grateful that that's how it went. But just like Chelsea and I were both like, wow, we keep asking more and more and more and more. So it's really, really amazing to have just like such a generally positive thing. Yeah. Just like, yes, I'll do that thing.
Yeah, I felt like that was my job during the race, was just to say yes, because I have a pretty wide breadth of experience, but nowhere near the rest of the team. And it was the biggest thing I'd ever done. The first trek was the biggest trek I've done in a 24-hour period or whatever, 30 hours. And then you just add on from there. So it was just like, stay positive, say yes when someone says something. When you get cranky, try not to get too cranky, and then bounce back and just keep an open dialogue.
So, well, that's a good segue. Let's get into the race, or at least the pre-race. Was there a lot of pomp and circumstance? Did it feel like world championship, or did it have a little of that, COVID feel, things were closed down? Or, I mean, what was that like before the race?
Before the race, I felt really safe, actually, in Spain. Everyone was wearing masks, even outside, and everyone was compliant with that. And it was just kind of like really safe feeling and not weird feeling at all. Then what stuck out to me was like, oh yeah, this is COVID still, is that we had to pass a test before entering the big Coliseum that's where all of our gear was and where we could go to prepare the gear. So that was our first like, ooh, are we gonna test positive? We all got a little nervous because we were all exposed from our teammate in nationals. And, but then after that we tested negative, and it just kind of felt like an awesome big reunion, I think, for most of us. Even other teams were all talking about that, is just like, hey, we're back and this is here, and we're super grateful to be racing in another country. So it immediately, once we all passed the test and we were able to get into our gear and get started, I think all of us were just like, just kind of fell right into the groove and were more excited than anything.
Yeah. So Dan, I mean, you guys are really experienced, but was there that, did you have to stop and really think and concentrate on getting ready? There's that, like Chelsea said, that coming together of everybody, and you kind of want to just say hi to everybody, right? But you got a lot of work to do. So did you have to think about that?
I think the only thing for us was just like, Chelsea and I had been preparing for like months at this point. It seems like just like all the little things, kind of trying to take care of stuff as early as we can. It was great to see all our friends. I think we struggled a little bit more after the race than before the race, of just like getting sidetracked with all the stories and all the people. Before the race, I don't remember having to like wrangle anybody and say like, focus on our race. Like, even though, we love everybody there, and it's just really cool to see everybody after, so many years.
Yeah. Did it feel like it's been what, 2 or 3 years, or did it feel like it's been like 6 months?
Felt like it's been a while everybody. For me. It's been a minute. Fiji was 18 months ago or something like that, maybe longer. September 29th. Yeah, it's been like almost 2 years since I've seen everybody. I guess I saw most of the people that I knew at nationals 3 weeks before, so maybe seemed less like a reunion, because most of the American teams were at nationals.
I have been like on a, yeah. I've been like more in a going under the radar, being in Ecuador racing, that race was hosted, and then in Europe there have been a couple of races, and there was just the European Championship 3 weeks before World Champs. So, but yeah, as Dan said, I think also it's like a big family gathering where you meet a lot of people that you know and catch up with people. And I think it's always a nice thing before the race to meet with everybody and catch up, and but still also be focused on your own team and dial yourself into to what's going on there.
Yeah, makes sense. So you guys had a plan for the race, obviously, to start. How long did the plan last?
We had a plan going in of, well, it was kind of a loose plan, but we were like, we kind of had to change a bit of our goals once we had Darren on, because we didn't want to overstress him or, we wanted to keep him healthy and keep him as a friend more than anything after the race. Yeah, that was our goal, is to all end up being friends. And especially for Dan and I, because Dan and I are very integrated together. We're neighbors and our kids are best friends. And of course, we wanted to keep racing with Lars afterwards because we love him. So that was our number one goal. And then it took me about 2 days to get on this plan, honestly, because I'm a pretty competitive person and it was hard to do the smoothest, fast plan that we changed to. And honestly, to not kill Darren, putting it bluntly. And so I was kind of in my head, it mentally, it was hard for me to switch to that. But then by the second day after the second bike, where we did almost have Darren go off a cliff, literally and figuratively, that woke me up to be like, oh yeah, we need to take care of the whole team. And we need to move at a smoother pace and not yo-yo effect. So after that, I think we did a really good job. And honestly, in the start, we did do good because we thought we were the very last team to start, to run through the starting line, because Lars was in the bathroom. And as the gun was going off or whatever was going off, and we heard all the teams going and all the cheering, we were like, Lars, we gotta go. And then we got him out of the bathroom and went through the chute, but we heard MRC actually did that too. So they might've actually been behind us. Yeah. But I think that was really good for us, honestly, to not go out super hard, but to be the very last team and have fun catching up to all the teams. And it helped me breathe and take the start slow, where usually if I'm up in the front with everybody, I just want to go like gangbusters at a 180 heart rate, which would not be good for us.
I think, you know, the kind of the way that it went is we kind of like started off at a jog and like slowly kind of took weight, readjusted weight. And then kind of as we're going through the second course, we're towing so much that we're literally breaking our toe systems. And that was kind of the wake up call when I was like towing with this broken toe system that didn't have a bungee in it, which basically means that the like bungee system is in Darren's fingers and my lower back. And those are not sustainable, you know, shock absorbers for that. And so I was just like trying really hard to make this work. And I know Darren's like struggling to like, you know, keep the tension reasonable, and it's just killing both of us. And it's just like, this is stupid. Like, let's not do this. You know, we can't, this is not sustainable anymore. And so we just kind of had to keep shifting how we managed all the different things. And so eventually it was just like, okay, this is the thing. We'll shift weight. We'll kind of rearrange packs and stuff to make sure that we all have what we can handle. And then from there, it was pretty smooth. And the only kind of like bumps in the road were you know, needing to find an extra helmet and making sure that we took all the mandatory gear out of the pack that we ditched. You know, which is both just like, oh, come on. We could have got unforced errors. Like we didn't, I don't know exactly how we could have avoided that, because sleep deprivation makes you do crazy things. But it was one of those things.
So, I mean, how long did it take you to really just like get in the groove and get kind of all that sorted out?
I mean, for me, it felt like we were in the groove the whole time, honestly. Like, you know, like we were bouncing off of the guardrails or whatever, like however you want to describe it, you know, but it felt like we, you know, started, we were very like in sync and kind of going really well right from the get-go, just like adjusting the things that needed to be adjusted, sticking to our plan, like having the kind of difficult conversations to make sure that we're all staying in the same kind of headspace and in the same plan. Honestly, I'm, you know, super proud of our ability to kind of like make a plan, stick with it, adjust it as necessary, like make sure everybody's, you know, happy, fed and paying attention to what they needed to be paying attention to. Like nav wise, things went really smoothly. It was just, I think the difficulties, you know, were just the things that you expect of just like, should we sleep now? Should we sleep later? Don't sleep with your legs up the wall, Dan, because you'll hurt your knees. Like just the standard dumb stuff that happens every time, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Our communication was really open. And I think that's what really helped us stay, as Dan just said, like within those guardrails. Our wheels never fully came off because, you know, Darren was really communicative about where he was at, both physically and mentally, throughout the whole race. And so that really helped us be able to help him. And that was huge because he was kind of the one that we didn't really know about, you know, how he was when he fully got exhausted or when he bonked or, you know, so him being open, like, hey guys, I'm feeling this way. And then we could quickly stop and mitigate it.
Yeah.
So Darren, we set ourselves up really well for that in the first stage, kind of pushing hard, but making it through. And then the second stage is where I had the hardest time for me. I kind of, what Dan was talking about, the toe was really rough. And at one point I somehow stopped eating and was almost even worse was I stopped taking Advil. I wasn't keeping track of that. And so my legs locked up and we had to kind of figure that out and push through it. And then after that, the communication got even better and you know, taking care of each other got even better. And because of that, we moved faster. And it made we set ourselves up in those first two stages to make the rest of the race, the last five stages, go even better.
Did you have a problem maybe a little bit at the start of saying that this is too much, or this is, you know, this is how I'm feeling, or right from the start, or did it take a few hours?
You know, that's something I've worked on a lot. And I think it's, you know, again, it was easier with this crew, but I had a hard time at the very start. I had a hard time figuring out, how close I was to my edge. Like for the first 8 hours, I was kind of lightheaded and that was maybe I was pushing a little bit too hard and was a little bit too warm. But everyone made it easy and they kept, you know, reminding me that I could talk to them and I needed to talk to them. And it made it easy to open up and let them know if I was having a rough time and when, and that in turn helped them be able to see when I was having a rough time. And so eventually I didn't have to be as verbose. I still tried to be, but we could all kind of recognize how things were going as things went on.
Yeah, I get that.
I think also, is, you know, no, I think also one of the things that I see is most important in an adventure race is that you have no pride, that you can ask for help and you can give help, and that you shouldn't be feeling bad about anything happening. And I think half an hour, 1 hour into the race, Darren was feeling pretty warm, and Dan as well, and myself included. So we basically stripped down to only having the bib on. And then 10 minutes later, we actually had to drop the pants. And then me and Darren was running in underpants, and like, we are still racing forward, and doesn't matter if we only have underpants on, we can still race like this. And and we can still have fun about it and joke about it. And I looked at Dan, who had a television appearance in underpants, that said, "What is wrong with this team? What is wrong with this team? Now we're two new people running in underpants and having fun about it." And I think also just along the way, stay positive. And like, you're maybe feeling really bad, or you're not having fun in a short moment, but if the three people around you are having fun or enjoying, then it's really easy to tag along and stay in this positive mood that we're still moving forward and we are having fun about it. So I think that was also kind of a really important thing about the whole team.
Yeah. I don't think there's ever been a race before where I have laughed so hard so many times that I was crying and actually had to like stop my bike. So the whole, like when I look back on this race, that's what comes up for me, is just like how much I laughed and how much fun we had and how many stories there are around that. I still have memories and it still makes me laugh like out loud of what happened out there. The other thing is that we had a rule from the very beginning that nobody could say sorry. And I really feel like that rule helped us out so much. And it was for everyone, you know, if there was a small nav error or if Darren started feeling bad and saying sorry, we're just like, nope, can't say sorry, dude. And we were like, yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, that's interesting, but was that just so that the person couldn't feel sorry for themselves, or, I mean, what was the impetus for that rule?
I mean, it kind of started like Darren and I were just in my garage and he was building up a bike or something and he wanted a tool and he said sorry about something. I was like, dude, like you just dropped your whole life to come race with us for 2 weeks. Like, you should be saying you're welcome, right? I should be saying thank you, and you should be saying you're welcome every time anything happens, like good or bad, yeah. Right? Because otherwise it's like we would have thrown away the world's ticket or the world's entry and like just walked away from this whole thing. And so it's just like, it's crazy. Like, don't apologize for not having this tool, like, or whatever it was. It's just like, no, your bike's dirty because you've been living in your van and you don't live in a house and you haven't spent the last 6 months like kind of dialing everything in for this moment. So it's like, of course. And then at some point during the race, like I did some, I don't remember what it was, but I was just like, oh, I'm sorry. Like I'm feeling something, you know, I just like, I can't take this weight. Like somebody else needs to take this for a minute. And so I was just like, sorry, I just can't do it. And then everybody was like, there's no sorry. Like you're out here giving it everything. And I think that was really the thing. It's like, we were all out there giving it everything we got. And when you have to pull back from that, for whatever reason, it's not like, it's not something wrong that you should apologize for. It's just like, it's part of the thing.
It just is.
Totally. Yeah. And so when you're out there not sleeping very much and pushing really hard and not eating enough and like just kind of we're at the edge of what is possible for human beings to do, the failure mode is like getting angry, and it's okay. Like, we don't need to say sorry because somebody yelled at somebody. It's like, this is expected and it's okay. Like this is a place where, you know, we can tolerate people getting short with each other or yelling at each other or getting angry or getting sad or getting frustrated. Like all these things are okay. Like this is just expected, you know, we're all out there at our edge and we all know we're on our edge. And the only thing to apologize for is if you're not actually trying or if you start phoning it in. And because none of us were ever phoning it in, we've never like stopped racing or never were like not trying hard. There's just nothing, like it's just all part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it kind of gave everyone permission to, instead of being sorry, it gave like, it was more like, hey, this is how I'm feeling. And the team had the opportunity to kind of come in, you know, and everyone, like Dan said, everyone was giving so much. Like if there was, you know, the nav was amazing. So if there was ever any like tiny mistake, it wasn't something to be sorry for. It was like, oh, you're doing amazing. Let's like fucking get after the next, you know, the next section. Or if someone wasn't feeling good, you know, or if someone was cranky, like it was, instead of apologizing, it was, let's, you know, think about it and think about why you're feeling that way. And like, talk about how, what we can do to push forward and keep going. Or maybe you just need some food. Here's some food. So it was nothing to be sorry for. It was just, we're racing. This is how it is.
That's a good lesson. Well, when people say, what do you need to know about adventure racing? I'll tell them, this is the one you want. Don't ever be sorry. I think that's very, could be very important to people. So, so a little nuts and bolts about the race, but what was the nav like? What kind of train were you on? What were you doing?
It was a bit of a conga line for the first couple of days, where it's just like, you just see the three teams ahead of you and the three teams behind you. And you just kind of like go through, there was no route choice really. It was one of the running jokes was like, the few route choices, you know, Lars or I would say like, oh, we could take that like muddy horror show of a farm trail, or we can take this nice paved road there. And so it was like the route choice. But in general, the maps were just perfect. Like every intersection that we hit was perfect, almost the entire way. And so it was just a matter of read and run, you know, just make sure we stay on top of the maps and make sure we stay alert and excited. So Lars and I handed the maps back and forth, mostly because it was like, ooh, I want to nav some. And so then, you know, we trade back every map, which worked really well. It was really fun to hand back and forth. There was only really one map switch screw up where I like asked Lars in the middle of the night to navigate because I was getting tired and I wanted something to occupy my brain. And that like totally failed. I just like ran us off the cliff and then handed it back and said, here, I'm sorry, I think we're somewhere around here. Because I, you know, like we were just absolutely just total zombie walking to the finish. And then he took it over and finished it out. But other than that, like idiot Dan kind of maneuver, we basically, the nav was, you know, we had a really fun time.
That's cool. So
yeah,
how hard was this race for you guys? I mean, you've done and won some of the hardest races in the world, but does the teammate thing and the expectations, I mean, how hard was this race? Chelsea, you're smiling. I want to know how.
I would say it was a very physical race. As Dan just said, that the navigation was not super difficult, but it was constant. It was not a race where you could get super, super lost. And it was not a race where you could get like, make a really bad route choice and lose like 3-4 hours. It was just constant navigation all the way. And if you had two navigators on the team, you should pretty easy to make like solid orienteering or navigation during the race. The landscape was a bit hilly, but it was not that brutal. Most of it was either asphalt or trails. There was, I think, almost 1 or 2% maximum bushwhacking or off-road. So in that sense, it was, I would say the hardest part of the race was there was so much on concrete. I think we started out with a marathon, 40K on asphalt, and half of the whole first 160 kilometers of trekking was on asphalt. And most adventure racers don't run asphalt. So that being said, was like it pounded the legs really, really bad. And most of the trekking stages was actually able to run it. But since we got more and more tired, it was trekking on roads and trails and stuff like that. So I would say from my perspective, it was more like a physical race than a technical or gnarly race, if you could say that. I really enjoyed it, but in that perspective, I don't know if I felt there was some adventure moments, especially the kayak in the canyon was like nice adventure race stages, for sure. But yeah, I think your other can add something to that.
Am I unmuted?
No, you're unmuted. Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay. I second that with Lars. For me personally, I came into this race super prepared. Like Dan had said, we had been training for many months under Jason. And so I felt good physically. The thing that was hard for me was all the pavement and trails. My feet were not prepared for that much, even though we had kind of known that it would be a lot of trails. I just didn't know the extent of how much pavement and how many trails. It was fun to like go through all the villages and super, super beautiful area. But yeah, I personally feel like it lacked that adventure part that I am used to. So that was hard to kind of overcome. And then the navigation, I mean, Dan and Lars just made it seem like we were on, you know, yellow brick road, just following, like it was just felt like a holiday, just following them, of how much they joked of like, oh yeah, should we take this? And it was obviously not the route.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So Dan, was it world championship quality?
I think so. I think it's really hard. Like adventure racing is such a weird sport in that there are so many different subtypes and so many kinds. I think one of the things that this race did really well is just kind of sort the teams, right? There was so little route choice luck and so little navigation luck. Like a lot of worlds that I've done or big races that I've done, there's a lot of choices where there's just not enough information where you're like, oh, we could do this or we could do that. And I don't really know what the bush is like there. I don't know what the trail is like there. So you just kind of flip a guess. And so it's very easy to kind of blame success or failure on like, oh, we made this route choice or this route choice or this gamble or that gamble. And this race was very much just like pretty clear line, long, like thing, the person who does it the fastest wins. And I think that makes it kind of a really reasonable world championships. Like it's very easy for me to say like, oh yeah, you know, the teams that beat us very much earned it. And the teams that we beat, we earned it. And so it's interesting. So I think there's something to be said for that. I'm not totally convinced that it's my preferred style of racing. Think personally, the amount of pavement on treks was really like the part for me that was the hardest. But at the same time, that's the terrain out there, right? There's not people who've been living in that part of the world in a civilization-y kind of way for basically, you know, thousands of years. And some of the trails and roads that we were on are there since Roman times. And so the idea of having like a 100-kilometer trek with some trail and some bush bash and whatever, that's not a thing there, right? Like that's not what that part of Spain is for. And so for me, it's like, I don't think there was a different race course in that part of the world that would have been like better or whatever. It's just like, that's what that is. And I think it's an amazing place. It was just incredible. I had, you know, it was pretty funny right before the race, I was talking to Shane Hagerman about our nutrition stuff. And he basically was like, told me that my nutrition choices for this race were crazy and that I needed to bring more fruit on the race course. And I was like, are you carrying like a bag of apples out there? Like, what's the deal? And then it turns out that, you know, we saw an apple tree every 2 or 3 hours. And so we were just like, pick an apple off the tree, eat the apple on the ride. And I was just like, Shane, that was a really brilliant brilliant thing to tell me to do. It's just like, there's apples all over the place out here. This is easy.
It was also awesome to be able
so
to
tasty.
Go in and get croissants and espresso. You know, it was just like super cool to be able to do that every day almost of the course. We had some croissants, espresso. We even got ice cream and chocolate milk. And I mean, like, this is the race that I've spent the most money in. It was just like so fun to be able to just hop in a grocery store really quick and just grab things and come out and be like, sweet, this is awesome. So that was really, really fun to do. And also, I think the race director did a really good job for what he had and for how many teams that came. You know, like, that's a huge task to take on, world championships after that big of a break with 91 or 94 teams. I mean, I think he did a good job for what circumstances he was dealt, the cards he was dealt, I should say.
Yeah, that's cool. All right, so we'll get wrapped up here. A little quick note
about our food shopping along the way. We had approaching night, and then we had a cafe coming in, and then we stopped there with the bikes, and two people was making chains and making sure the bikes was fitting okay and eating some, and two people was going in and buying a lot of coffee, and then on the disc I saw like a whole mountain of donuts, and I'd asked if we could buy all the donuts, and she said, yeah, how many you want? And then I took a Ziploc and then I emptied the whole plate of donuts, and then she came with I think four coffees, and then I asked for four coffees more, and then emptied the coffees into a water bottle, and then in the end we paid for all the coffees and got like two water bottles full of coffee and like a whole Ziploc full of donuts. And then I turned around and then I saw like four elderly men just staring at me and said, what the fuck just happened in there? And then, yeah, it's just some of those moments that is so hilarious during a race is you interact with the normal society and the normal people, and you're just in a different world, and we needed calories. We needed like fun food to eat, and we needed some coffee to drink during the night. And that's not normal to go in and buy stuff like that. But in our circumstances, it seems pretty normal. So, yeah.
It is normal for you guys. So, all right. So I got a separate question for Darren and the rest of you. And this may be the dumbest question I've ever asked anybody ever, Darren, but are you happy that you went?
Yeah, I'm ridiculously happy I went. Like, I'm proud of myself for being able to jump on the team. I'm proud of the team for being able to like push through and get 24th out of 94. That's insane. I'm excited that we were the top US team. It was my first time in Spain. I loved all the villages. Yeah, like, you know, even coming back to like mountains of work, and you know, that I didn't end up getting the photos done from that race I was shooting until way late because of it, and I missed out on some family stuff as well with nieces and nephews and my folks, and it was still like just an amazing adventure, and I'm super happy and super grateful to have even been on the list of people to call, you know, in the last minute to get there. So yeah, I'm happy that I did it, and I'm happy that I got to spend that time with my friends out there.
Cool. All right. So Dan and Lars and Chelsea, giving everything that happened and all the stuff, are you satisfied with this race? Chelsea, you go first.
I think that's a simple question. Yeah, I'm super excited with everything that happened with this race. You know, we were able to push hard and work on our team dynamics, dial in more things, learn a ton. And it was just an amazing vacation for us to be able to step away from everything in our normal lives and go to Spain for 2 weeks. That's, you know, and run around. That's like a dream to us. And we have memories for years, and yeah, we're like family now, and I think it was all worth it. And I've, yeah, like Darren said, I'm super proud of what our placement and what we were able to accomplish out there, and to hold to our goals. We're all friends and we're closer mm-hmm. because of it. And I couldn't ask for anything more.
Well, good. How about you, Lars? Happy with the race?
Yeah, I'll just, yeah, the first time, but basically the reason why I do adventure races is to have fun and go out and get a big adventure. And and I also do social aspects to meet people and meet that I know and have a great time with people. And I really got that one. And to bring Darren along is like really amazing to have that experience. And I think, yeah, we had something special during this week in Spain, and it's something that we had together, and I'm really grateful to be a part of that. And super happy. I had a great adventure and we had tons of fun, and I'm looking back and would do it another time if possible. So, yeah.
Almost last words from you, Dan.
I think for me, the challenge that I had for us as a team coming out of Eco Challenge was sticking to plans, right? Like, we spend a lot of time ahead of races, kind of thinking about what the plan should be. And then right before Eco Challenge, our plan was very clear, right? Like, don't go too hard out of the gate, like, don't overheat, you know, and like pick up steam as the race goes on. And then as soon as we started, we abandoned that plan without talking about it, without any discussion. We just hammered our faces off, and I dug myself into the biggest hole of my life. And then it was just over, basically. I'm proud of where we wound up in that race, but just the idea of carefully laying a plan and then immediately abandoning it without thinking about it is just a pattern that we've had. Like, that has happened to us before. We kind of talked about having made that mistake before Eco Challenge. And so it's just like really depressing to just, you know, lay out, this is the hole that we're going to fall into. Let's walk around the hole, and then just like falling, like just, you know, jumping off the diving board into the deep hole. And so I'm super proud that in this race, we set our intention, made the plan, executed the plan, adapted the plan, like just very much had the discipline. And so the kind of funny thing about this race is like halfway through or towards the end of the second bike ride, we were just like talking about how important discipline was. And Lars and I kind of got into this like, oh yeah, discipline is super important. We've been really disciplined this race. And as we're like, you know, talking about how great discipline is, I just like ride right by the checkpoint and I stop watching the map as we're talking about how important discipline is. So we weren't perfectly disciplined the whole time, but we were significantly more so than in previous races. And I think that for us as a team, stepping up our game in the discipline department is the step that will take us where we need to be. And this race was very disciplined from the get-go, like from the training perspective. You know, we were very, Chelsea and I were, you know, in the gym doing exactly what Jason wanted us to do for training. And then that carried over into the race. And I think that as we continue racing, that is going to continue paying dividends.
I'm sure it will. All right, we're going to finish up with the most important question that everybody wants to know. So tell us about the helmet. Come on, somebody speak up.
You want to tell it?
Lars, I want to hear you. But yeah, start talking, because last time you went out a little bit.
Okay, yeah. No, so the whole concept was that we lost the helmet during a portage during the kayak, and we figured out during the TA of the bike, and we were around looking for another helmet if some teams luckily had an extra helmet in their bike boxes that we could borrow to the end of the race, or if there was any teams that was dropped out of the race. And it seems that no teams had an extra helmet, and the official didn't have a helmet. And then we asked, can we from here without a helmet and then figure it out? And then when we got a helmet, we can continue biking. And they agreed that we could hike from the TA with the bikes and then go to the local village and figure it out. The only problem was the local village was a small one with around 100 people in the countryside. And it was 3 o'clock in the night. So basically nobody was up. But we located one person who had lights in the house and we got him out. And Chelsea is luckily pretty good in Spanish. So she explained that we was missing a bike helmet, and he was just like tossing his head and said, like, the only chance you will have is like either bike 10 kilometers that way or 15 kilometers the other way. And both of those roads was out of bounds on the map. So we basically couldn't travel there, and we had to do it hiking. And then in the past, I have seen Chelsea talking with Spirit B, which is like it's their dead born son. And she hit a wall with the foot and was pretty angry and asked, Spirit, can you help us? And then suddenly a mouse came running out of the wall. And Chelsea just said, let's follow the mouse. Even though I had a bit of sleep deprivation, I was like, oh no, this is the dumbest thing I ever done in a race. Like, it's 3 o'clock in the night and we are following a mouse at city to find a helmet. This is not good. But somehow we all got convinced that we should follow this mouse. And then we went around, and at some point the mouse ran into a building, and then a lady turned off on the balcony, and we explained to her that we was looking for a helmet, and then suddenly she disappeared. And then 1 minute later, she was at the door with basically a helmet in her hand and said that we could get this helmet. And the crazy thing that we can't really deny is the whole picture of the helmet was a mouse. So it was basically a kid helmet with a mouse on top of it. So it's kind of like a really, really special coincidence. And then, yeah, we had the helmet. And to add that on, it was a laser helmet, which is our sponsor helmet. So all of us had like laser helmets anyway. Just Chelsea got one with a mouse on. So yeah, I think it's just those things where you actually have a fifth or sixth team member that comes along on these big adventures. And I think it's also some of those moments that you have to be open and be ready to grab and say yes to thing and stay positive and just, yeah, grab all those moments that you get along a big adventure. And I think it's a big part of it. So yeah, amazing, amazing story. And it's crazy to say what actually happened, but this is how we,
yeah. All right. I can't top that. We got to end there. That might be the coolest story ever. So thank you, everybody.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Randy. Yeah, thanks, Randy. Thanks, Randy.
Okay, well, we'll catch up when we catch up, right?
Right. We'll see you at another race or after one.
Yeah,
we will. All right. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Bye. Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Well, I've never been to Spain, but I kind of like the music. Say the ladies are insane there, and they sure know how to use it. Can't refuse it, can't misuse ain't never gonna lose it. Well, I've never been to England, but I've always liked the Beatles. I was headed for Las Vegas, but only made it out to Needles. Can't you feel it? You must believe it, 'cause it feels so good. Well, I've never been to heaven, but I've been to Oklahoma. People tell